Oh, okay. Oh, well. So I know it's the end of a long day, but the night is not over. So to energize ourselves, let's first start with some chants. So we'll start with an easy one. Peace treaty now. End the Korean War. 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 Okay, thank you.
My name is Kyung Lee. I'm with Mobile Corp for Korean Community Development. And just before we get started, just a few housekeeping things. So the first thing is I have to ask, except for Fred Nguyen, who we all know is from WBAI, are there other folks here from the media? So
I might do something, but I don't know if I will. Here, just
also. Okay.
I used to write All My News International.
Oh, okay. All My News International. Okay.
Now I thought they closed the English edition.
Okay. Okay. So I just wanted to make clear to folks that our policy for tonight's event is no media unless you've had prior discussion and authorization from with the organizers. And All My News we'll talk about later if you decide to. Yeah. And there are some folks who are going to be taking photographs and video for tonight. Marlo is with the Brecht Forum. And Dave is taking pictures for Nogutur. Are there folks in this room who don't want their photos or videos taken? Raise your hand. Okay, so just people will just make note of that. Just one person in the back. Oh, and one there as well. Okay. Is it possible, for Fred's sake, for the two of you to sit in the same general vicinity? Or is that okay for them to just sit there and there for you? It's okay. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. Okay, thank you. And also, we wanted to make tonight's discussion not so much like a talking heads panel format, but more of a group discussion. So if you could do the best you can to fit yourself into the circle so that you can see other people's faces. If you're in the back, feel free to move up so that we're all kind of engaged as part of one group discussion. That would be great. And then the third thing is we have to thank the Brecht Forum for actually initiating this event and providing us the space for tonight's event. So a round of applause for them. And on your way in, if you have not already made a contribution to the Brecht Forum, please think about doing so on your way out. Thank you very much. Okay, so now let's talk about why we are here tonight. So the aim of tonight's discussion is a movement discussion on the need for a peace treaty to end the Korean War and how to respond to the current crisis on the Korean Peninsula. So like I was saying before, we hope that this can be a group discussion involving everyone, because there's collectively in this room, there's actually a lot of knowledge already about the context for last week's crisis, and then also a lot of organizing experience in the room. So what we hope to do is share experiences from organizers from other struggles and other communities about how to respond in situations like this. Without further ado, let's get started. What we wanted to do in the beginning is to take some questions from the audience initially. Think about what are your questions that emerged for you since last week and this week about the crisis in Korea. And it can be about kind of the historical context, what caused the crisis. It can also be like strategic questions How do we as a progressive movement respond to situations like this? And if I'm going to pass out these index cards, if you could write down, if you have questions, write down these questions, and hopefully that can be in the mix for the discussion for tonight. So I'm going to pass these around. And while these are going around, if folks can also just share verbally, let's take maybe 3 or 4 questions that people thought about last week and this week, so we all get a chance to hear. Nothing? Yes?
I have a question about the relationship of the relates. Could you ask some people to help me understand the relationship between the event that occurred with the Cheong, I might not say it.
Yeah, Chenan.
Yeah. Thank you. Ship, and what was the end result of the fact that the United Nations did have some quote investigation? Could you update us on that and tell us the relationship to them that were working?
That's a good question.
Great.
Any other?
I think the question of the peace treaty is very important, but I think we have to understand what it would entail and who would sit at the table and what's the significance of North-South relations and then multilateral relations beyond that. So I think it's a complex question which has a long history, but I think we should also try to understand what the significant elements that would go into a peace treaty would be.
Great. Big question. Yes?
I thought that there's a real context for it all, and yet the American media covers none of it and just leaves people dumbfounded. And it's very hard to see that. So why don't progressive people in this country have a publication that they can really use in a situation like this, and what gets done about that?
I'm not too knowledgeable about the history of Korea. I just wanted to know, in terms of the pro-unification movement, who are the major proponents of the pro-unification movement? And how are they posturing themselves in the midst of this crisis?
Great question. Okay. So if you have other questions, please write them down. And myself and Chuyeon, who is co-moderating with me tonight, also from Nodutor, we will collect them and so that they can be in the mix for in the discussion. Okay, so the agenda for tonight is like this. First, we're going to have a brief presentation about the historical context for, you know, what actually led up to last week's incident and the crisis currently on the Korean Peninsula. And then what we hope to do is a collective discussion on analysis, kind of what caused last week's crisis. And then we also hope to have small group discussions around questions around strategy. So how do we then respond to situations like this? And how do we work together to de-escalate and stop kind of escalation towards all-out war? So that's the agenda. And I'm going to introduce Betsy Yoon, who is also a Nodutor member and who's going to give us a brief presentation on the historical context. So you can come up here. So Betsy is a Nodutor member. She knows a lot about the issues, but she doesn't like public speaking. But situations like these call for leaders in our communities to rise to the occasion and overcome some of our fears. And so she has boldly agreed to do this tonight. So round of applause for Betsy.
Thank you. So thank you everybody for coming out here tonight. So I'm here to talk about sort of why we are here tonight and help us formulate like a collective analysis about what's going on. I would like to start off by emphasizing that this latest shelling is only the most recent incident out of several that have occurred over the past 60 years since the end of the Korean War. You all will have received a fact sheet by the National Campaign to End the Korean War. This is a coalition and of which Nodutor is a participating organization. And I'm going to refer to it here and there during my presentation. I'm not going to go into a lot of the specific facts that are outlined in the sheet because you can read it yourself and it wouldn't be interesting for me to just read a bunch of facts. So I'm going to talk about why this is happening. If you follow the news media, you'll get the impression that the United States and South Korea are being beleaguered by an irrational North Korea that's throwing, quote, temper tantrums each time, like, according to a specific situation. And each time this happens, there are voices on both sides in the United States and South Korea that are calling for war. So when analyzing this, it's important to realize that the incidents that are outlined in the fact sheet, like the military disputes or the Cheonan incident that was mentioned earlier, are not isolated incidents and are part of a broader historical context. So I'm going to pull out two key themes that were raised in the fact sheet that are both interrelated. The first theme is militarism, and the second theme is the fact that the Korean War has yet to end. In terms of militarism, I'm going to go through several elements of militarism that have been occurring since the end of the Korean War. The first is the decades of war games that have taken place between South Korea and the United States. These are very large in scale. The fact sheet talks specifically about this latest war game and exactly how much resources are involved in conducting these war games. And they simulate a variety of attacks on North Korea, including nuclear attack. There's also, the Pentagon has outlined several scenarios, and one of them is called O-Plan 5029, which is a Pentagon scenario that outlines plans for military intervention in North Korea in the case of regional instability. So if North Korea were to destabilize, then the United States and South Korea have a plan of military action to go into the country and do what it is they plan to do. There is the third element of United States troops in South Korea. There are currently 28,500 troops located in South Korea, and this causes several ramifications, one of which is the issue of base realignment. In the past decade, the United States has been in the process of moving its bases around South Korea, which has resulted in displacement struggles in South Korea. The high presence of U.S. troops has caused also social problems, such as the deaths of civilians when the military acts irresponsibly, and so on. So the second element is the fact that the Korean War is still ongoing. Active fighting concluded with a 1953 armistice. And you'll notice if you've been reading the news that President Obama has been calling for North Korea to abide by the terms of the armistice. But there are there's many terms in the armistice that the United States is not abiding by. One of which is the fact that a peace treaty was supposed to have been signed within 6 months of signing. It's never been signed. And after a peace treaty is signed, foreign troops are supposed to leave Korean soil. So those have both not happened. Another aspect of the fact that the Korean War is still ongoing is what's called the Northern Limit Line, which is the immediate cause of this latest incident. The Northern Limit Line is a maritime border that was drawn unilaterally by the U.S. Navy. It's not included in the Armistice Treaty. It's never been recognized by North Korea, who has continually disputed it, and it's also not an internationally recognized maritime border. There's a fourth issue of military command of South Korean troops. The United States currently has wartime command over South Korean troops, and what this means is that in the instance of war, the head of the South Korean military is a United States four-star general. Now, what this means, like, one example of how this plays out in actuality is South Korea announced that they were going to hold more artillery drills on November 30th. And because they announced it unilaterally without the consent of the United States, they later had to announce that it was postponed. So that didn't happen because of the fact that they didn't consult with the people who are in charge of their military. And not only that, but until 1994, the United States even had peacetime command of the South Korean military, which means that from the end of the Korean War until 1994, the United States was in charge of the Korean military in all situations. So wartime command was supposed to return to South Korea in 2012, and as many of you may know, this summer at the G20 summit in Toronto, Lee Myung-bak, who is the current South Korean president, and Obama agreed to push this date back to 2015.
And there's a many elements of the fact that the Korean War is still ongoing, but the final element that I'm going to talk about today is the divided families on both sides of the border. At the conclusion of the Korean War, millions divided on either side of the border and separated from their families. You all have seen media coverage of the family reunions that take place very intermittently, but this is only a very small percentage of the number of families that are actually divided. And as you know, they've been suspended with this latest hostilities. Millions of these people have not been able to see their families for 60 years, and they are all getting very old now and may never be able to see their families. So now, I mentioned earlier that the two heads of countries agreed to delay the transfer of military command, and I think it's important to ask, you know, why they do that. What are the interests behind maintaining the state of division and this conflict and the state of war that happens? So first I'll talk about U.S. interests. One of them is the fact that it justifies the U.S. presence in South Korea and in the region as a whole. In addition to wartime command, in 2006, the United States and the then President Noh-Moo-Hyun concluded a strategic flexibility agreement, and what that means is that U.S. troops that are based in South Korea are able to, under this agreement, are allowed to deploy troops to other conflicts that are not related to the South Korean conflict, whereas prior to that, they weren't allowed to do that. And I also mentioned the base realignment, which one of the ramifications of this is that it enables the United States to militarize against China without explicitly saying so. There are also several the United States has several economic interests in South Korea, and the Korean conflict is consistently cited by U.S. congressional legislators when they're trying to advocate for U.S.-Korea FTA. There are many other interests that I cannot mention in this brief talk. So South Korea's interests, one of them is that it justifies the development and militarization of South Korea's own military. They have their own military-industrial complex that they've created. They're displacing their own citizens for their own military naval bases, one of which is Jeju Island. They're going to build a naval base in a region that's been designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And it'll destroy all the environmental benefits of that area. So, to conclude, why are we here? I'll just reiterate that this situation this situation can escalate very easily. So, there's 2 million troops on the DMZ. It's the most highly militarized region in the world. The two countries are very close to each other, obviously, and so Yeongpyeongdo, which is where this latest shelling took place, is less than 12 kilometers from the closest point of North Korea. So it's very close, and there's very little keeping the situation in check. So we've gathered all of you here today to talk about how, in times of crisis like this, we need to sort of be able to sit back and put the situation that's happening into its political and historical context, and talk about who is benefiting, what's causing the situation to continue, and analyze root conditions. And another thing is that we want to be able to, as a movement, figure out how to effectively deal with situations like this, how to respond quickly, how to come out with a proper analysis, and all that. So this is my transition to the next portion, where we will talk about our collective analysis.
Hi, my name is Juyeon. I'm a member of NODUTO. I'm supposed to facilitate this discussion. We know that this forum or this discussion meeting was decided in a really short time frame, and we didn't have much to put out as a notice to collect. And then we really thank you for coming and try to discuss it. To to collectively strategizing and, you know, build our collective analysis on this issue. So we have had a great questions, and according, you know, as Betty said, this is not an isolated incident, or it was not done because unprovoked by unprovoked attack. It was not an unprovoked attack. So now we see that the military drill has been going on, the artillery attack or artillery drill that had shed almost 5,000 shells into the confronted or contested water on that day. And that without that, that has not been really mentioned in the media. And people think that because North Korea has this crazy leader, or they are very illogical, that they would do anything for no reasons. And we always have to ask the question, is North Korea really benefiting out of this military confrontation? Who is really benefiting? Right? And why is the U.S. in this? As Betty briefly discussed about the U.S.'s interest, that has a lot tied into our U.S.'s economic interest. But also in the region, there's a China interest and there's Japan interest. That all is connecting the militarism with an economy. There are economic interests on the North Korea, Northeast Asia. And as you but what does it impact us living in the U.S. as citizens of the U.S.? Does it has anything to do with us? And I figure, you know, how much does it cost to drop that bomb? Some time ago when I came to the U.S. first, and I saw the firework in the Macy's, the July 4th day, and then my father told me, in order to shoot out that one firework, that in Korea it's 30 gamani. What's gamani? 30 bushels? Is it supposed to be big? So 30 the units of the rice you have to sell. It's costing like, you know, the 30 bushels or whatever would feed entire village, and then they are wasting that the firework. Like, you know, you have to get 30 of them. Entire, not only village, I think entire province that you can feed. So how much would this 5,000 shells cost? Like, why are they really putting the money into the sea to scare or to escalate the tension? And how does it impact us at this time of our economic crisis? So, you know, that's another analysis that we need to do as people living in the States, what this has, what kind of impact, economic impact this has to us. So we had asked Sarah Flounders from the IAC to talk briefly about the connection, and now I'm going to give you the floor.
Let me first start by thanking Brecht Forum and thanking Nodu Toll for organizing this meeting tonight, because it is so important, as soon as there's a crisis, that there be a response and that there be analysis and action. So really, I did want to touch on this question, because especially from here in the U.S., we always got to look at what is it and who is it who keeps Korea divided. And Korea would not be divided today except for the role of the U.S. military all these many years. Nor could the Korean War, with the death of 3 million Koreans have been. It was a U.S. war by every measure. But to this day, it's the U.S. troops and military and keeping a constant state of war. But the latest provocation is maybe the most dangerous that there has been since the end of the Korean War. And the reason it's so dangerous, and we should only think back to what was the first step in the major escalation of the Vietnam War. It was U.S. ships coming right to the coast of North Vietnam at the time, and then claiming they were fired on. It was called the Gulf of Tonkin Incident. And immediately came U.S. congressional resolution within 24 hours. We could think back to Remember the Maine, which led to the war against the Philippines and the U.S. as a power coming into Asia, along with the seizure of Puerto Rico, Cuba. So it's not unusual for the U.S. to use a military, a naval exchange and a complete fraud in order to launch a war. But especially today, this is a time when there is a global capitalist economic crisis. No solution in sight. And the attacks that are coming down here, and you could look at any of the demonstrations and rallies across Europe, look at its impact in Asia, they have no solution for this crisis. And they have no real end in sight. And what they're proposing is an enormous round of cutbacks here. And this is the same view of every capitalist class on a world scale right now. Just yesterday, 2 million people were completely cut off of extended unemployment benefits. That means left destitute, no possibility of a job in their future, and extended benefits cut off. Also, just yesterday, by executive order, a wage freeze on federal workers was declared. Not even something that went through Congress. Unilateral action by President Obama. So this is the climate, along with the closing of schools right here in New York City and across the country, increases in tuition. And I could go on and on. I think everyone here knows so well what's happening. So the real possibility of war is absolutely part of their calculations. Last week, there was a major op-ed piece 2 weeks ago in the Washington Post saying the solution for Obama in dealing with a new Congress, Republican Congress, and dealing with the crisis in the economy is war with Iran. And it depends almost which day, whether they're talking about Korea or Iran. And it's one, whether it's Western Asia or Eastern Asia. But Korea has been of the greatest economic and trading importance and its position in Asia. But also, especially when you take into account where this exchange took place, in the Western Sea or the Yellow Sea, so which borders China on two sides and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea on the other side, sailing aircraft carriers. It's now, I think it's up to 70 ships, 500 planes, I don't know how many attack helicopters and so on and so on. Nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, battle group, all in this one area. Head of the General Military Command, Admiral Mullen, said yesterday that there would be new military maneuvers within the next couple of weeks. So this is not only what just completed, and of course it was also very dangerous military maneuvers and strong objections coming from China in July, in the very same place. So this is not only what's happened today, but what's happening next week. There's calls for a whole new generation of aircraft carriers because this is profit. And I really want to sort of end my comments on that. And that is, war is profitable, enormously profitable for the U.S. military industries that are the decisive economic power on Wall Street today. Oil and military corporations. And the drive for war is absolutely part of every administration, doesn't matter, Republican or Democrat. And every administration, Republican or Democrat, has been committed to keeping U.S. troops in Korea, into refusing to sign a peace treaty with Korea, and being determined to keep Korea divided. Just in the minute I have left, I did want to say there's a very important rally tomorrow at 33rd and Broadway that I think just about, well, quite a number of the organizations I see here are co-sponsoring. It's an important time to speak on the street. We have a sound system. We're going to be a strong force. There's Broadway there is kind of a mall, very busy shopping area, because we want to take the challenge, both have it in discussions here, but also take it out into the street, because it's the best way of, in the political movement as a whole, taking and challenging ourselves to be able to speak publicly and to rally other forces and to connect the war in Korea to the ongoing occupation of Iraq, the endless war in Afghanistan, the drone attacks in Pakistan. Really, when you look at it, this is a march directly across. It's also tied to President Obama's trip to Asia, so well publicized. What on earth were they discussing when he was meeting in Seoul during the G20? All of this, we have to assume, was discussed and planned at that time. And this intentional provocation of firing thousands of shells for hours before the DPRK responded. And then, in the New York Times, the first morning it happened, it was very interesting. The first morning it happened, they reported that the firing first came from South Korean ships. By the next evening, they had kind of gotten their story in line, and it was all a provocation coming from the North, and all sorts of psychoanalyzing of, in the most racist and offensive terms, as if the country of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea is somehow not quite sane, and they were to blame. They're provocative and aggressive and so on and so forth. And really, the source of war provocation around the world is the military that is right here, explaining this to people in ways that understand their own interests. As I was standing outside just before the meeting started, there was a homeless man who had just come in and was going out again, and he heard the meeting was on Korea. He said, "Well, it's about security, isn't it?" I said, "No, this is a war about profit, so that there's no money here for jobs, for health care, for building housing, for all the things that we need. And if ever there was a time when we can make those links, it really is right now. Because now there's desperation for so many millions of people. If ever there was a time to say jobs and health care, not another war, this is really it." So I know these are kind of general comments. I thought it might be, you know, better to do that than to cite many facts and figures, because looking at this audience, I think this is many people who struggle and really take up these issues in the struggle all the time. And that's what we have to think how to do. Everything that we say about Iraq or Afghanistan or the war right here at home, we have to say now and bring in Korea every time we raise, every time we say U.S. troops out of Iraq or out of Afghanistan, we got to also say out of Korea. Thank you.
Sarah, could you repeat the action tomorrow, the information?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, maybe we could pass around those yellow flyers back there. It's at 33rd Street and Broadway from 5 to 6:30. We have a sound permit. It's not a big stage. This is more like a street rally. It's just actually Herald Square is like 34th to 36th, that triangle. This is 34th to 33rd, but it's this new, you know, they've made Broadway into a kind of a mall right there. So it's a west side of the street. And also just to say that Hyun Lee will be speaking afterwards at a meeting, so we'll invite you after the rally if you want to come back for dinner. And a meeting to the Solidarity Center. We'd very much welcome everyone. But the demonstration, and we want to be well-planned for that. We want to be well-planned politically and also security-wise and organizationally. I think we know that even though for the most part the Korean kind of contra forces, the Korean right wing, those who are for U.S. occupation are a couple of generations older. In other words, they really come out of that first war. But they may also be planning to mobilize, and so we want to be a strong and very cohesive force.
She brought a couple of points that I want to kind of emphasize on. But I'm not sure if the format of this, you are aware of this format. So there will be an analysis part, and then there will be a discussion for the building up the strategy. So on the building up the strategy, we will be focusing on, you know, a few questions we have prepared, and we want to be able to talk amongst ourselves and come up with some kind of solutions or, like, you know, better strategy or understanding of the movement strategy as a collective. How can we move forward together? Having said that, so we have invited a lot of people who are also doing a lot of anti-war work. And what IAC is one of it, and also an answer. And of course, our Filipina sisters working on FIRE and BIUSA, Gabriela Network, and all other, you know, they have... Yes, everything. So, having said that, I think one of the questions, just coming right, continuing right where Sarah said that, you know, we have been red baiting in the community a lot, but I'm not sure if you are familiar with a law that persecutes anybody who's enabling the quote-unquote enemy. So it's just like a Patriot Act or all of a sudden it just skipped. What was the law that just passed here after the 9/11? What? Yeah, Patriot Act, okay. Was I right? Oh my God, okay. It just came out. Just like that, there is a national security law that has been in force since 1947, even before, right after the division. And then they have been red baiting in South Korea heavily. If you make a contact with allegedly a North Korean, then entire your family, three generations up and down, will be persecuted just because you have a blood ties, right? And that kind of put a lot of people in a silencing, and that's happening in our community too, in this immigrant community. What that made us do is to feel like, you know, if I do something wrong, then my parents will suffer. Or, like, you know, people will be, they will want to do something about it, but then they are afraid to, because the consequences is so grave. So, you know, the movement, Korea, I think you would know, has a very strong movement, though, still, and a lot of resistance work has been done. In the context of that persecution, people sacrificed entire their family, entire their loved ones, to really hit the street and come out and say what kind of military dictatorship they were in, what kind of, you know, injustice was going on. And most of them were persecuted as North Korean spies, or, you know, they don't even have to, if it's under the NSL, National Security Law, they don't have to provide any reasons for arrest. You know, they can arrest, and then they can put into trial like 3 years later. And you're during that time, they can die or whatever. That's one thing that I just wanted to put it out there. But I was wondering if somebody can, like, you know, I know you guys all are very experts, right? We are not like, this is not only educating about Korea issues, but I was also wondering, what would be the Japan's interest in this? Would Japan, a lot of people say in Korea, Japan is the one, the six party members are comprised of the people who never wants really a peace in Korean Peninsula. That's what some of the article says. So if somebody can explain or tell us a little bit about, you know, what we think or they think, what we think of Japan's interest and China's interest.
In preventing war. They were particularly wiped out due to the war which their government was part of, but the Japanese people have a very strong anti-war sentiment and anti-war tradition. So that the Japanese people's interest is for peace in Northeast Asia, for particularly. And there are many forces in Japan that would unite with other forces who are pushing in that direction. There was just recently a film that was called ANPO, which was the name of the treaty, and the film showed how strong the Japanese people fought against the U.S.-Japan treaty that allowed for the bases, and there's a very strong anti-base movement. So there's a tremendous alliance possible with the Japanese people. The Japanese government is a government with some confusion. There was there was an effort to end the bases in Okinawa, and there was central government support for that. But that was after the Chonin incident, the government collapsed in some ways. Mm-hmm. But it's continuing.
So
So there is even within the Japanese government some forces that are anti-war. So I think there's also a lot of reaction in Japan in the Japanese government. And at the current moment, I would say that the United States is attempting to change the dynamic from six-party multilateralism to a Cold War type activity, which is Japan, South Korea, U.S. government axis pushing North Korea to unite with China and working on which way Russia will go. So I think we're in a complex situation, but there is a force for the alliance with the Japanese people, and then there's the difficulty with the dominance of Japanese politics up until recently by the presence of 90 bases, U.S. bases, and the U.S. activity, which is still very strong in Japan.
Is there anyone who wants to add a little bit? Thank you very much. That was very good and precise.
I don't know the specific details, but just knowing that post-World War II, Japan is not allowed to militarize, and basically as long as the Korean conflict is ongoing for Japan, the military, like, elites and those who want Japan to build up its army again kind of use or justify the presence of North Korea as a reason to militarize. So there's also that very strong, long tradition of Japanese militarism.
Among the right wing and in conservative sectors to get rid of the peace constitution, and the U.S. is in fact in support of that.
And in fact, the U.S., South Korea, and Japan militaries do combined military exercises all the time.
Do you know how many people were involved in this military drill the last week? Or the one right before it, so that the shooting happened before while the shooting was happening. Yeah, 70,000 to 75,000 troops. In Korea, the number of troops that is stationed is 28,000. Where did this 50,000 troops came from? Well, it also involves South Korean too, but you know, it's from Japan. Where was George Washington? George Washington just appeared riding to the Yeonpyeongdo, right? It was in Okinawa. It was right in Japan so that it can move in one day's time to the site of conflict, right? Also, I think that when you go to CIA, they give out the budget, military budget of the military spending, I'm sorry, military expenditure chart. That U.S. is number one, and Japan is always number five or four, without even a military there. And South Korea is like eight, and you know Iran and North Korea is like in 20 somewhere down there. And but it's just that sometimes it feels like you know North Korea can really gauge a war, a nuclear war. When you read the newspaper and people's comment on the responses, we recently did an online action. It was really interesting. It was a bit too much technical for me to follow, but you know, we go into the designated time, we go online, we go to use the social network called Facebook, and then go into the CNN website, New York Times website, and we recommend articles to people, you know, and then we go and then make a write a comments on one particular article that we decide to read and together. So then, you know, I was reading the comments. I never really read the comments on the article. The comments were so racist. They wanted to, you know, the North Korea, Kim Jong-il should die, or, you know, his son should, well, he's a fad or whatever. So, you know, and then, you know, we were trying to respond to it in a reasonable way. Peace is the most economical solution. Promoting peace would save the country, not only save the country, but save our community here in the U.S. And people are like, they would respond back with the, you know, very hateful remarks too. But when we do that, wait, I lost my train of thought. Where was I before the online action? Why did I talk about online action? Oh, yes, it was really exaggerated. So when you read the comments, it's a lot about the nuclear power, the uranium enrichment plant. But North Korea always has said it is very defensive, and a lot of scientists in South Korea also, I think, has written publications about the North Korea's has no capability to really engage in a war. If they can make five nuclear heads, for example, if they boast that, how many nuclear heads do we have right at the border? I mean, you know, it doesn't matter, but it's all about the media play, and somebody is gaining. Of course, I think media is another entity that gains, corporate media. I think one of the questions was, why don't we have an alternate media? In South Korea, there's a strong people-supported media outlet, you know, the newspapers, the articles, and internet papers, and then they do... So then they support those newspaper and they always go to the newspaper. I think, you know, WBAI, we have some other alternate, you know, media type or these forums and other things, but we will be talking, we can talk more about how to build them and how to use it, how to respond to this hateful media. So then, sure.
But is there any strategic significance of the Korean Peninsula to U.S. imperialist ambitions in the region, and how does that relate to the neutralization of both China and Russia at the same time in terms of its hegemonic agenda again in the region?
Does somebody don't take that? That's a really great question. That's an important question to Hyun.
Started off the conversation, I'm sure other people have. But I just happen to have a very great quote
from the former U.S. Forces in Korea commander. His name is B.B. Bell. And he was interviewed in an article in Joint Forces Quarterly in 2007. And his response to a question, the question of, you know, the Cold War is over, so why does the U.S. still need to have a presence of its military in South Korea? And this was his response, exact quote. "The Republic of Korea represents a vital national interest area for the United States. 25% of the world's trade flows through Northeast Asia. 24% of U.S. foreign trade flows through that area. Our economy is a global economy, and we depend on global markets for our national well-being. It's extremely important that this area of the world remains peaceful, stable, and open to free trade so that our business interests can flourish."
So, you know, the great thing about Army generals is that they're not like politicians, and, you know, they're not so great about keeping the truth secret. So that sometimes they're very frank. And, you know, he's very explicit about why he was the commander of the U.S. forces. He's very explicit about why his troops are there. He didn't say to defend from communism or terrorism. He said, we're there to protect national interests, which is about our profits, business profits. Okay. Ben?
Hi, I'm Ben from the Answer Coalition. I'm very happy to be here. I'm really happy that this dialogue is happening. Hopefully, the whole anti-war movement will be at the next one. The people here seem to be those who are always accused of knee-jerk anti-imperialism, and of course, those of the ones who are the first ones to point out what's going on. But hopefully, the others that are kind of usually sitting on their hands will come out to the next one, because I think actually there's a vast potential to explain Korea in a way that people can understand. I think that, you know, we should also be clear about regime change. You know, that people are kind of used to the term regime change, and for most people they understand that it's tied to deceitfulness on the part of the U.S. government with Iraq. People, when you say this is regime change all over again, this is demonization of North Korea so as to pave the way for regime change, I think a lot of people understand sort of instinctively that it's therefore BS. And so I think we should utilize the kind of reserve of anti-war sentiment that exists with Iraq, because, you know, the country does by and large reject that, and explain how the same phenomena are in place here. I think that you know, the relationship with Japan is important. Perhaps this is not one we're going to put up on our placards, but at least for activists to understand, you know, the U.S.-Japanese relationship has been built on this sort of junior partnership, where the U.S. will function as the military force in the Pacific and sort of guarantee and protect Japanese commercial interests. And that's kind of always been the quid pro quo for Japan to not develop their own nuclear weapons, for instance. So I think that the United States is always going out of its way to show excessive militarism and excessive strength in the Pacific, in part as a way to stabilize Japan and to make sure that Japan doesn't you know, come up and eventually become a competitor itself. And then also, I think that we want to draw people's attention to the demonization of China, which is only going to escalate during this economic crisis. And, you know, you've already seen the beginnings of trade wars, which could begin. You know, that's what all the propaganda around, you know, the currency revaluation. And if history is any guide, a trade war can very quickly and almost spontaneously, you know, lead to military conflict and confrontation. And so, you know, regardless of whether the United States planned the shelling, you know, 2 weeks ago, they certainly did everything they could to maximize the encirclement of China and to push China by bringing the George Washington into the Yellow Sea. This is the one time
the American people should say, bring the George Washington back to America. But I do think that, you know, the demonization of China, which both the Democratic and Republican parties are going to escalate in the next year or two, guaranteed, we have to see this as part of a combined effort. And, you know, in a lot of ways, they're seeing North Korea and the Korean Peninsula as a pawn in their game of encircling what could be a potential power.
A presentation at the Korea Society a little while ago, and it was very interesting because the person was from Canada, a professor from Canada, and he talked about before the Korean War, some of what was happening was it was after World War II, and the American people and even the Congress wasn't building up a military presence around the world, that there was a lot of sentiment against the military presence. And what the Korean War did is it opened the floodgates for the people in Congress to push the military budget and to push the bases in Europe and around the world. And so I had never thought about that before. And I think what's important is there's a pressure now to cut the military budget. And this is some of the kinds of things that we should expect to see in the supposedly trying to keep and spread the military budget. And so there's a fight on. And I think what's important is that we keep in mind not only what they're doing, but the fight also has forces challenging it all. So I think that I would hope the discussion would go like the Chonin. People around the world fought against the misrepresentation of the Chonin situation. And it set the basis for the Security Council to do something different as well, it seems. So I hope we get to bring something like that up. And yeah, but it also didn't have its effect here yet in the U.S. with the U.S. media.
Thank you. So I just wanted to say one thing in response to your question about China and Russia, and I think Betsy already mentioned it earlier, and that is about base consolidation in Korea. So a few years ago, the U.S. military's rhetoric around its positioning of troops in Korea changed. And so if you go to the Department of Defense website, you can read this in their documents. They're called Global Posture Statement. So if you look at the posture statement for Korea, it's very explicit that their concern no longer was about North Korea. It was about China. So there was a plan that started to be implemented around 2004 to consolidate the bases in Korea. So previously, there were 99 smaller bases and installations. So the plan now, which has already started, is to close down the smaller bases and then expand the larger bases. And the slogan is, think capabilities, not numbers. So even as the U.S. is withdrawing the number of troops from Korea, they're expanding the capabilities of the bases so that they can launch very large missiles from those large bases. So I just wanted to add that because I think that, you know, if you look beneath the surface, and as Hyun said, sometimes the military doesn't really hide what they're doing. So if you can, you know, go find it right there in their documents.
I just wanted to add that there's an election in the Republic of Korea in 2012. There's an election in the United States in 2012, and there's a leadership change in China in 2012. The reason I mention that is because within China, there is a worry among the netizen people, at least, about a war. They don't want to see a North Korean war because it'll spill over as it did in 1950, 51, 52. So there's a concern about war. And within the Chinese government, as best I understand, there are two factions fighting over the question of whether China is too weak now and must go along with the U.S., or whether China must have an independence somehow and strengthen its alliance with North Korea and other places. So that there's a dynamic in all of the countries in the area, that is Japan, China, and especially in South Korea, where there's a strong Candle Girl movement from 2008 and other opposition and resistance movements and very active NGO movement because of the strength that people gained from their fight against the authoritarian rule up to 1987. So there are many forces that are also asking these questions and speaking about these concerns. So it's very important, I think, to seek out international alliances as well as city and state and national alliances.
I'm Ardeshiro Moni from American Iranian Friendship Committee. We face the same situation in Iran. With regard to the United States. When a few years ago, a relation between North and South had begun, like 3-4 years ago, I was very happy, hopeful, that the North and the South will have at least trade relations, human relations, and some understandings would develop between the two, that socialism is not a dehumanized system, and probably capitalism can also adapt itself to in some measures. But what did the United States do? And every time it does, it did it with Vietnam, North and South. Now it did it with Korea. Because the unity of the people of a country is detrimental to the interests of U.S. imperialism. So they did everything in their power to... I was looking at that map. I'm trying to answer the question why the United States is encroaching on the rights of other nations. That tells a lot. I was looking for Iran to see, but that tells us to stop bombing. What's very good, United States, this is a premise. I start with this premise, that the United States wants to rule over the world. And this premise is not hard to prove. You see it in the theater of Europe, in the Middle East, in Pacific area, in Latin America, in Africa, in every part of this world, the United States is about to control the economic, the military, the resources. That's what we are facing. We have to know. It is not a policy, and it is in the nature of the thing. I'll be short. How we can help? Because Korea has been demonized for 60 years. 60 years. Iran the same, after the coup of 1953.
If the peace is about how to help, I think you should save it for our strategy session.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because we are going to do smaller breakouts of the strategy session what to do about media, what to do about the red baiting, what to do about silencing of people, and what to do with our alliances and networks.
Sure. Thank you.
So I think, yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I wanted to go back to this point. What is the U.S. really trying to do with this? And part of it does have a lot to do with the encirclement of China and what is increasingly being called a new Cold War against China. And the excuse becomes Korea and the demonization of Korea. A lot of it is also meant for domestic consumption right here to justify a big escalation in military budgets. At the time of Obama's trip to Asia, there was some very candid articles in the media talking about how, and especially the importance of projecting a massive new generation of naval power in the region. And they talked about the Straits of Malacca off of Indonesia, the first time that was actually raised about the Yellow Sea or the West Sea. And in the same way in which they always project the Straits of Hormuz and Iran and the oil that comes and so on. But this is really a very dangerous development. More and more, you see hardly a day or two passes without another major article talking about new Cold War. You can Google it in and just see the whole number, new Cold War against China. There's big economic interests at stake, and the U.S. feels the enormous competition because of the growth of China as an economic power. It's a big threat because this is an empire in decline and decay. It's not in the position it was 50 and 60 years ago during the Korean War, when it was rising. Really, half the productive consumption of the world at that point was U.S.-produced goods. Today, it's a fraction and shrinking. What's produced here these days? Beyond weapons, most of the weapons are actually produced here.
Here.
But if you think of almost anything else we use, wear, electronic goods, anything, including steel, I mean major goods to minor, it's produced internationally. And China is certainly a power in this. So a lot of it was how to realign relations with India also, and how to remilitarize with a whole series of new bases, and also developing as forward bases those bases they already had. So in that way, this is also playing to domestic consumption and the next round of military budgets. At that time, they were also saying why a year of U.S. troops in Afghanistan, that would buy us a new aircraft carrier. I mean, they look at questions this way. So anyway, just to really connect it back to China, and at the same time, the right of the Korean people to be united, reunited, and for U.S. troops to be out, we can't just be talking about the China part, because the Korea part has played a big role for 60 years and more.
I also want to mention that it's not because Korea is so special, but it's an imperialistic design of the U.S. is trying to expand that region. So, you know, for example, I was just looking at the Philippine situation too. You know, Okinawa, Japan. Okinawa has been strategically, you know, put into the Japan, but in Okinawa, a huge masses of land is occupied by the U.S. airbase. So that even in one province, in order for you to go to the next, your relatives, you cannot go across it because there is a base. So you have to, for 2 hours, you have to go around it, you know. In that much, there is a huge presence on it. Philippines have had a lot of problems with U.S. base and U.S. military intervention and the political and economical intervention. Korea is not an isolated case. We have to always see, because we are in the U.S., living in the U.S., these incidents are serving us, I mean, not us, serving the U.S. government, the corporations, the we say it like, you know, the military-industrial complex, and then corporate media to oppress people. We had this forced sense of urgency that there is a war going on, there are people going on. We are still so much better, and we have to endure whatever the injustice that we are receiving. We still have to be satisfied whatever the little that we get here, because we are so much better than somebody else or something. So we have to be always aware. And then, you know, I think because we have a lot of commonalities when it comes to who's causing all these problems in the world, I think connects us and different communities, different people of color communities, immigrant communities, all of us together into one. I wish I had a little more time for the analysis parts, but now we have to move into our strategy session. So then I'm sure in a smaller session, smaller groups, that, you know, people who hasn't spoken will step up a little more, and, you know, people who have been speaking will, you know, let the other people to, you know, take a lead. So I'll give, yes. Hi, Andy. Would you like to announce? announcement.
Hi. So my name is Andy, and I'm staff at Naruto. It's good to see everyone here tonight, and thank you so much for coming out on such short notice. I have a jar here, but I have a story to tell you first. So we've all heard kind of the analysis of what's been happening on the Korean Peninsula and the historical context. And I think, as Betsy and the other speakers have pointed out, that the rhetoric that we constantly see has been very polarized. North Korea is the enemy. We should bomb North Korea. You know, the United States needs to take its big ship and show North Korea a lesson, teach it a lesson. And I think for many of us that are a part of Naruto and other organizations like Naruto, it's really personal, right, to hear those kinds of that kind of rhetoric. A lot of us have family members on the Korean Peninsula, and to know that they're in danger, that there is a threat of war looming over the peninsula, it really hits home. And it's funny, you know, I was actually talking to a family member a couple of days ago about, you know, is everything okay over there? And my sister said, you know, Yeongcheongdo isn't next door to our house. But she did realize in the conversation that we had following that was, you know, everything's okay, but it's very tense here. You could cut it with a knife. So, as other people have mentioned before, we've been very active in really raising awareness about the situation right now in Korea. We've done an online action over the course of 2 days. We've had emergency conference calls with other organizations across the country. We've been participating in rallies. We're participating in the rally on Friday in Herald Square. We're holding this event, and we want to take it a step further and not just talk to our allies, the people that are in this room, but also the people outside of the room, the people that really need to hear the message behind why peace is necessary on the Korean Peninsula, and why a peace treaty really does count, and why it can happen. So what we're doing, and what we'd like your help with, is we're going to continue our media advocacy work. We're going to continue sending out resources and materials on our Facebook page, continuing to write op-eds, continuing writing letters to the editor to correct the facts and get the true message out there. But we also want to take our message to the Korean press, Korean-speaking community, and to start a conversation with them. As Jiyeon said earlier, you know, a lot of our elders in the community have a lot of baggage from the Korean War, a lot of scars, a lot of bad memories, and a lot of propaganda that was taught back in the day about who started the war, how the war happened, and so on. So what we're going to do is we're planning on taking out a series of ads in the Korean press to start a conversation with the Korean-speaking community. And unfortunately, because we do live in a capitalist society, it costs money. So if you have a chance, we're going to have a jar in the back of the table outside. After the discussion, we have refreshments for everyone, so please stick around and enjoy some food and drinks. But if you have a chance, stop by the table and donate $1, $5, whatever you can, to help us really push our message out there to the Korean-speaking community, to start a new kind of conversation around how peace is possible. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're about to go into the second part of tonight's discussion. So the spirit behind this discussion, I think, was from on the part of Naruto members. There was a desire to really learn from folks from other struggles and other communities about what do we do in situations like these, because, you know, it was Thanksgiving. We were all, you know, everybody was spread in different places. And then this kind of crisis just happened on us, and we said, what do we do? And what was really helpful for us was our allies calling and saying, you know, we want to help. We're organizing a rally. Let's do it together. You know, we want to do a teach-in. You know, let's do it together. These things were really helpful for us and really gave us a lot of energy and ideas for what we could be doing. And so I think this We recognize that this discussion tonight is very valuable because this is an opportunity for us to really learn and to share ideas. And so that's the discussion that we want to move into. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to break up into three small groups. And I'm going to trust this. Okay, let's treat this as a group building exercise. I'm going to trust that we can all self-organize ourselves in a very well-coordinated and efficient manner. The only rule is that people from the same organization, you need to spread yourselves out evenly in the three small groups, right? And we have 2 minutes to do it. And after everybody is in the three groups, then I will read further instructions about, you know, how to proceed. So are you all ready? Okay, so before we go, there's a question here.
Also under attack, Venezuela, Cuba, all these other countries, and I think it's really about time that all the organizations of Asia, Africa, India, South and Central America really get together and try to mobilize, because it's really one struggle, and I don't think, we don't want to marginalize Korea as just being just that one issue.
Can I add a caveat to that? But also, how do we connect it to our local struggles? People in my community might say, what does this have to do with us?
Right.
I mean, that is the sort of natural response in this climate that you've described so well. So how do we begin to connect it to our local struggles so that people can see, in fact, that it's part of the same facing problem of imperialism, whether it's home or abroad. Right. And that's very difficult.
We really have to move on, so gotta make it quick. Two comments.
I'm going to follow up with this, and I hate to change or even suggest to change your schedule. However, when smaller groups get together, it all deteriorates, and before you know it, your meeting is over. My suggestion, if at all possible, let's keep it all here, have all of our discussion here, come up with whatever we want to come up with here, rather than 10 people, 10 people, and 10 people, and then
what do you think
going to happen at 12 o'clock?
So just to explain, the spirit behind the small groups, I think, was that it allows for more people to engage the conversation, right? And so there's pros and cons to both. We thought through it. So I think the best thing right now is to just see a show of hands and just put it to a vote for the group, which we would prefer. So show of hands for people who would rather stay in a large group.
Can you say what the groups are? Are they going to speak particular topics?
Yes,
specific topics. Can you say what they are so people know what the alternative is?
Sure. So the original plan was three small groups. The first group is to talk about how do we organize ourselves in the face of the corporate media. So our greatest challenge this week was that the corporate media and the way that it was framing things, it was very, very difficult for us to get out the historical context behind the crisis. And so what do we do about that? The second question had to do with how, you know, there is a recession in this country, and there are, you know, many of our local struggles have to do with cuts in unemployment, jobs, etc. And there's a growing unpopularity, a waning popularity in terms of wars abroad. And so how do we use that as an opportunity for us to talk about stopping the war games, withdrawing troops from around the world? So that was the second question. And then the third question had to do specifically with red baiting. of progressives in times of quote-unquote national security crisis. How do we deal with that? Most immediately having to do with the action tomorrow, knowing that there's going to be counter-protesters coming. What do we do? How can we work in solidarity to respond to things like this? So those were the three questions that we really, from Nodutor, wanted to put out and engage with other folks tonight in a discussion. So is it okay that we proceed in that way?
An opportunity and we can do it now, which is I would like to have known all the people here somehow. The best we could do is take 20 minutes and let each person say a little bit, so when I sit down with them I have a little idea who they are. That would have helped before, but I would suggest that for now.
Okay, so I don't think I really like that idea, and I wish we had done it in the beginning, so I apologize, but we don't have time. Would it be okay for us to do that, though, in the small groups? So at least in your small
groups. If we vote for small groups.
Yes, if we vote for small groups. Okay, so are we clear on what the options are? All right, so show of hands, who would rather stay in the large group because we want to hear from everyone and we don't want to deteriorate? Okay. Show of hands, who would rather go in the small groups and promise that we will not deteriorate? Okay, so let's do the small groups. All right, can we proceed? Okay, so the areas are one group here, one group there, one group here. You have 2 minutes. Spread yourselves out evenly in terms of your organizations.
We'll do that and then we'll stop.
How do we know where to go?
Also from WDAI, from the organization Justice Community, the organization Take Back WBAI, and the organization and the WBAI local station board itself.
And therefore, what's the significance of...
Hi, my name is Sheila Hamanaka. I'm actually a children's book writer and illustrator, but I'm active around WBAI. I'm a former producer, and I'm with Take Back WBAI.
I'm Rhonda, and I'm part of the Waldorf International.
My name is Anna Maria Ramirez, and I'm part of the Anti-Coalition.
But I've been dealing with magazines and the effort to have the journalism.
My name is Shahid Kamran. I'm a secretary of Pakistan, USA Freedom Force.
Just before I came here, on the way here, it was a very important rally tonight for the anti-war activists in Minneapolis and Chicago who were rounded up, who are facing subpoenas and so on.
My first name is Hanalei.
I came to the United States the first week.
I'm a volunteer. Right. My name is Morlo, and I take Russell's class, and I participate with Take Back and No Justice.
Iran, I'm putting up almost the same.
Especially, our question is really about addressing corporate media and the way that it's really been, slanting the narrative on Korea. So, I guess, do people have some ideas or comments about what?
Can I say something for a minute? That the chonin is very important to look at. Mm-hmm. Because what was
the editor of the Black Agenda Report and on the executive committee of the Black is Back Coalition.
Could you say your name, sir?
Glenn
Ford. I've seen your name. I'm sorry. It's just wonderful to meet the face. Thank you.
My name is Nellie Bailey. I am with the Black is Back Coalition. I'm the director of the Harlem Tenants Council, and I'm also with Cuba Solidarity New York.
Hi, I'm Yoko.
The netizens
took it up,
and activists took it up. And they also sent things to the security council,
but
they spread it around
the Bayan Northeast coordinator, but also a member of Filipinas for Rights
and about what was wrong. And this, they have some wonderful newspapers.
If you can hear me, three times.
So everyone come together. Come back together, please. We are going to have a short, very short and decisive report back time. I hear that a lot of good suggestions were made and discussions were good, I hope. Was it deteriorating or was it encouraging?
No, encouraging.
Encouraging.
Stimulating.
Stimulating.
Great, great. So the group that had the hardest time was so heated that couldn't break up. How to bring this action abroad, in Korea action, related action to our local community.
Yes.
Can you make a report back, please? Can you also, can you also make it like, actually, why don't we take 20 seconds to see, summarize in your presentation, if you can come up with three to five major things to report back. Right, to report back to the group, and then we'll try to compile these notes and share amongst the participants. Have you had the time? Have you had the time to sign up in the back of the sheets? There's a table. Then we'll make sure that these notes get circulated and shared among the participants as well, so that we can all have a benefit from these discussions. Can somebody? How did you like the small group discussion?
Very good.
Oh, it was good.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Ellie Armani, Iran and North Korea. Okay, I think. Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Ellie Armani, Eleanor Armani. Everyone knows me as Ellie. I'm a co-founder of the American Iranian Friendship Committee, which was started in 2004 when they were beating the drums about Israel or U.S. someone bombing Iran. The demonization has continued, and we know the importance of linking struggles together, because if we don't do that, then we're sunk, I think. Everybody's sunk. And that's one of the issues that we had, is how can we strengthen, how can the progressive movement have a unified show of strength. But I'll get to that after I present. The main thing that we talked about was showing how the issue of militarization and the threat of a war in Korea, or in the Korean Peninsula, is integrally related to the lack of people's benefits here at home. If 2 million people are being cut off and don't know how they're going to pay their rent or get their food and all that from their unemployment benefits, but then we have to bring to people the numbers of the trillions going for the militarization. And we said we can't do it abstractly. When we go to people, we have to have the documentation, just like the fact sheet that was given here. So one of the suggestions is we have to spread this information to others. We have to use the internet as a source of information so that the details, and we have to share it with the members of our own organizations. Because we came here tonight, we learned, but many Iranians might not know this, or Americans that support Iran. So I have to go back and tell my community. The second part of that is the issue of racism. We cannot talk about war. We cannot talk about injustice here or anywhere unless we address the issue of racism. It is the integral part of the ideology that justifies killing innocents, that justifies racial profiling, that justifies shooting young African black men at colleges because they're black. I'm sorry. That's it. And that's it's a terrible thing. And then the last thing, and someone mentioned that if you scare people, it's a sneaky way to get African American, poor immigrants, and foolish white people to join the military and go fight somebody else. And that was the third issue, that the problem is we have to teach people the logic of the imperial empire is It's China. It's Korea. It's Ahmadinejad. It's out there. But American people, it's a hard job, but we have to begin to teach them. It's the nature of how this system is organized, and it's here, internal to the United States. Did I summarize okay?
Thank you, Ellie. How about the group that had a media strategy? Hanalyn.
Hey, guys. I think we have 3 points. Is this part of the last question, too? Is that... So it's... Okay. So let's do 2 points and the last thing. So we talked a lot about the internet, which is not a big surprise. But we were talking about... I'm sorry. One of the greatest challenges this week was the way that the corporate media framed the news as an unprovoked attack on an irrational dictatorship or a part of a calculated plan to extort more aid from other countries, and very little on the role of the U.S. and the Lee Myung-bak admin in creating this crisis. How do we counter the corporate media's disinformation campaign? How can we use this moment as an opportunity to educate on the historical context of the crisis? So the way that the internet came up was this. It was about... It was about encouraging progressive media to cover the actual events happening in Korea right now. One major suggestion was to bombard Democracy Now! And demand that they cover this, that it's important to our communities, and so to kind of coordinate a send-in letter date, I think, was what we talked about in the group, to create your own media from your organization, meaning to just bombard the internet with statements of your own to control the image and to control what you project about the situation, that it means so much to you, and to look for hyper-local press, not only on the internet, but... you know, take advantage of these connections that we have with WBAI, the local shows that run call-ins, and what was mentioned was the talkback show with Hugh Hamilton or the wake-up call, and, you know, we're going to have, I guess people are going to distribute the information to those shows as well. Another thing was to, when we talked about like ways of approaching corporate media so that we can kind of get coverage in mainstream media as well, what was mentioned was, you know, have just come correct with your press kit, you know, and that was basically it. And the last thing was we, in order to maintain these kinds of alliances and to ensure that each organization is kind of... you know, helping the larger picture, helping all the other regional organizations that are kind of fighting around militarization, around displacement, around all those things that we share. We were talking about like linkage agreements between organizations, having access to each other's listservs, do skill shares even. I talked about the internet and Google Booleans, and people were like, what? Teach me how to do that so I could be the first hit. I'm like, yes, I will do that. So those kinds of things that we can do to popularize issues that are very important to us is, and it was a conversation about the internet, so thank you.
Okay, the largest group, and I'm sure the it was really interesting conversations. Jackie.
Hello. Hi. Hi, I'm Jackie. I'm from Filipinas for Rights and Empowerment, and Gabrielle Yuse, and Soshi. So we were in group 3. I'll just read the question so that we can gain a context for this. Progressives have always been red-baited and silenced in moments of so-called national security crisis in the Korean community here. The South Korean consulate plays an active role in monitoring the movements of progressives, and the local Korean media does its part in silencing all forms of dissent. It has been reported that at tomorrow's action for Korea peace at Herald Square, for example, there will be counter-demonstrators calling for retaliation against the quote-unquote Kim Jong-il regime, with local Korean media in tow looking for ways to sensationalize the inter-community conflict. So how can progressives demonstrate a unified show of strength in moments like this example, tomorrow's action, and undermine the efforts of reactionaries and counter-protesters. So we went a little bit in detail about specific moments where Norutol in particular was red-baited in the Korean community, and like I mentioned in the question, one was the Korean consulate, who undermined their work by sensationalizing and framing their work as traitorous and calling for and claiming that calling for peace on the Korean Peninsula is jeopardizing national security, and red-baiting them as pro-North Korean agents. So some solutions that we have thought of, I'm just going to list them according to my notes. A really strong force in countering red baiting is to organize young people into the organization and for the cause. And there are certain challenges with that because they're both attracted to the work but also scared by the media. But it's really important to organize youth because older generations of the Korean community can be a little jaded and hard to mobilize for this issue. Another thing is to create a peace coalition in the Korean community, specifically maybe with the church community, to strengthen the anti-war characteristic of this issue. Also, find if you do have allies in the Korean consulate, because not everybody in the Korean consulate is against you. So if you can find that ally, they can work with you from the inside. Also, appeal to cultural workers and artists who will create art that is digestible to the community but also political at the same time and can carry out your work. Also, appeal to emotional issues and make this campaign very personal and how it affects family ties. Remind everyone in the U.S. of mainstream movements that were also red-baited, for example, the civil rights movement. And very, very important, because red-baiting relies so hard on propaganda from the right, we should fight that by increasing a steady public education, especially to highlight the historical context of the issue, and especially highlight the history of resistance of the Korean people. And very most importantly, specifically about the action tomorrow, make sure that you have security forces from our sides who will be able to quell any agitation. We don't want any violence to interrupt or, to erupt or anything, because those are things that the corporate media can use against us. So, yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for coming out tonight, and I feel like it was a really, really productive discussion tonight. And I think many people have already said it repeated tonight to me and amongst that, you know, this cannot be the only time that we get together, right? That we came together because of the immediate situation in Korea, but we're actually in it together for the long haul because we share a common struggle against the military-industrial complex and against the agenda of the U.S. empire in the Philippines, not just in Korea, in Iran, in our local communities here. And so we will be sure to gather the notes from all of the discussions. We will definitely follow up with you all. I'm sure you'll be getting calls from some of us in the future about continued conversation to follow up on this stuff. There were 2-3 hands up. We have to make it quick. So let's start from over here and make our way around.
For coordinated action, so people could just join Norutol. If you're on Facebook, if you could join Norutol's Facebook, if you like it, then you will actually get the notifications about what to do, where to go, what shows to call. So, and also for people that were looking for resources, it's on the fact sheet, but endthekoreanwar.org is simple to remember. So
yes.
Endthekoreanwar.org.
Okay, back then.
My name is Shahid Kamrad, and I'm a secretary in Pakistan, USA Freedom Forum. I think that, first of all, I'm very proud of this city that Monday, the unity that we showed in New York Times Square. And thank God this, I'm saying really thank God for the all of you activists and what you're going through at this moment, which is a long time in 60 years. But Monday we were united over there, Ansar called it, IAC, another Pakistani, another group. But tomorrow I'm going to ask you specially, please bring every face of the Asian over there, Japanese, South Korean, Palestinian, bring other European people. We have to show the world that we are together, we are united against the war. And I think if we ask the other people to bring the drums, make some noise tomorrow over there, get some attention over there. We have to do some creative thing tomorrow. And we show the unity. And I'm going to ask you one thing very, that if somebody gets some kind of all total money, what we spend in the last 60 years in Korean U.S. Army, who's stationed over there, someone has to come the all money, total money at this moment.
Yeah.
And somebody will mention over there, and that will be a wonderful Pakistani community behind you, because we are under attack by the drones. Mm-hmm. We are undeclared war.
Yeah.
And I wish somebody will put the name Pakistan over there too.
Yeah. Right. That's
right. But only one thing, Asia is burning.
Asia
is burning at this moment, from Vietnam to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Asia is burning, and I'm going to ask the all Asians, please feel something in your blood. Stand up, this is your job, especially the youth. Stand up and get some peace for the Asia.
Yes, they are.
Last comment before we close out.
I just wanted to ask you, I hope that everybody has signed in so that we can make an email list of everybody who came here tonight, so that we can communicate somehow.
Right. Did everybody sign in?
Where is the sign?
There's a table, and then there's a... Oh, there's
make sure you sign in on your way out.
Make sure that you
sign
it up.
Okay.
Sign
in.
Sign in.
Can I just
yes.
This is my left dream.
Yeah.
That we can have a traveling road show and have a map of the globe to show the tentacles of imperialism, all under the banner of war.
Yes.
And what it is costing you, whether you're in the Bronx, downtown, uptown, or whatever, and that we just invade the city with this road show in communities where you aren't preaching to the choir, that you are talking about new converts, and that it's not the religiosity of the left, but it is in a language that working people can understand, so they can see that it is just not some downtown or whatever, whatever, that's coming into our neighborhood that has no relationship to what is happening to us, when in fact it has everything to do with what is happening in those communities.
That's right.
And the left is so fragmented that you can't do it, because everybody is about their own bullshit. So... You know.
Thank you. So, let me ask, how many people will be at the action tomorrow? Yes. Okay, great. So, before we go, we have to practice a chant. For tomorrow, we have to be unified, right? So, I'm gonna teach you a kind of a complicated one. Just one chant, but it's a little bit difficult. Okay. No, it's in English. Okay. Here. Okay. So I'll do it once, and then we'll do it together. Obama, you need to know the Korean War has got to go. That's the first part. Okay. So let's do the first part together. Ready? Obama, you need to know the Korean War has got to go. Obama, you need to know the Korean War has got to go. Obama, you need to know the Korean War has got to go. Okay, the second part. No war games, de-escalate, sit down and negotiate. No war games, de-escalate, sit down and negotiate. No war games, de-escalate, sit down and negotiate. Obama, you need to know the Korean War has got to go. No war games, de-escalate, sit down and negotiate. Okay, that's the chant for tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. Help yourself.